Hey everyone, thank you for joining our podcast today, Energy in Action. I have a great interview coming up with one of our active mito moms out there, Sue. Sue is the mom of Frankie, who is a mito patient, and they are in the lucky part of the northeast of the country, right there in Massachusetts, and where the heartbeat of mito medicine really is. And I'm really excited to hear all about their story and life with Frankie and everything there is to know. So Sue, thank you so much for coming on and being part of our podcast today. Why don't you go ahead and just give us a little background about your family and about Frankie and how your journey has been.
Oh, okay. It was, let's see, we'll start with our journey was a tough and confusing one. Frankie is my second child and he sort of started with some unusual symptoms, and we really had never knew what was going on with him from the minute he was born. He used to constantly throw up whenever, sorry to be so graphic, but he used to throw up every time he ate, and he would have diarrhea, and then he would become lethargic. So we were constantly at the pediatricians trying to figure out like what was going on with him and why. And so they sort of thought it was his formula. So it was a change of formula, and through a whole long process, it took us until he was about 3, maybe 4 to really narrow things down. And we have to thank his neurologist at the time. Her name was Dr. Capon. She steered us to, at the time, his mitochondrial doctor, Dr. Catherine Sims at Mass General. And through this process, we had never heard of mitochondrial disease or anything about it, what anything it entailed at all. We just sort of thought that it was all dietary. So,
How old is Frankie right now, so we can get a timeline of this?
Right now, he just turned 22.
Okay, so you are definitely in the early 2000s when all of this diagnosing was happening. And of course, yes, mitochondrial disease was in its infancy and being recognized. So kudos to Dr. Sims for getting that figured out.
Yes, she was wonderful. She really was, because I'll never forget. One of the things she did say was, when we were starting all the testing and everything, she says, do not go on the computer and do not investigate. And it was like, okay.
So did you?
Of course, that's, I have to say, I didn't right away. But as we sort of continued with Dr. Sims, then I sort of went against her orders and I did. And I learned a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And it was still confusing, because it's something that, again, I never heard of, and nobody in our family exhibited anything like Frankie has. So it was a confusing process, but it was trying to explain to people, I guess, as a mom's perspective, I'm going to gear off a little bit and I apologize, but no. As a mom's perspective, trying to find out what was wrong with him, some people would look at it, they were looking at it like, what are you doing? Why are you having all these tests done? Why are you investigating this? Why? And it was sort of like, I'm not trying to find something wrong, but I want to know what's going on with him so I can help him.
Definitely.
So it was sort of, as a mom, I had to justify what we were doing and why we were doing it. And I still say I was doing it because I wanted to know what was wrong so I could help him and help him be able to, you know, I mean, the poor kid, when he would eat, he had to sit for like 20 minutes, because if he got up, he would throw up.
Oh, wow.
So as we all know, for a toddler, that's something that's really hard to do.
Exactly.
And he still is. He's a very energetic person. So for him to have to say, you have to sit, you have to stay there, it really was, it was tough. It was really tough, because it was sort of like we were hindering him from doing anything. But that was my perspective on trying to rationalize what I was doing to find out what was wrong with him. But with Dr. Sims, she said, you know, we had to go through all these tests. We had to do MRIs and blood work. And when we did all those tests, his lactic acid was known to be really high. So she said that was sort of something that geared her towards the mitochondrial. And she said the best way to identify it was a muscle biopsy. So we in turn did do the muscle biopsy, which again, for a toddler, it was a tough one because it was like, you can't move, you can't do this, you have to stay, you have to be careful. Mm-hmm. But we did do it and we got the results of him having mitochondrial complex one. Okay. And it sounds funny, but it was like a relief. Yes. Because we knew now we knew what was going on. And now it was like, okay, now what do we do? What's our path on trying to help him be able to do whatever he needs to do?
Right.
And she was phenomenal. She really was. She guided us for many, many years. She actually recently retired. And now we have Dr. Melissa Walker, who's another phenomenal doctor. But she steered us in the right direction. She steered us that we need to do the mitococktail.
Okay.
And he's been on the mitococktail for, oh my God, it's years. At least since he's been, like I said, four maybe, he's been on it. And I have to say, I did taste the cocktail just because I wanted to see what my son was eating. And it was like, I give him credit. I say, God love him, because it was the most bitter thing I had ever put in my mouth. And it lingered for hours.
Yeah.
But he takes it like it's nothing. And I give him credit for that. And we go to, I have to say kudos also to Saad and Company at Acton Pharmacy in Acton, Mass. They have been another godsend. They've just, whenever we have questions about the cocktail or about something that Frankie needs to take, they're right there by our side and give us the support and answering our questions.
Definitely. Saad and Ted have just been a lifeline for so many of our families on figuring out medications, explaining things.
Yes.
Those of us who have, I have zero brain cells for science.
Yep. So,
they explain things, so I'm like, oh, that's how that works, or that's why we're doing this. And
exactly.
Yeah, they are wonderful to work with. What does Frankie take just the basic cocktail, is like the CoQ10 and all of that, or
CoQ10, vitamin E, vitamin C, vitamin B, niacin, and he's also on a niacinamide capsule.
Ooh, good for you. That is a tricky one.
Yeah.
And did they just start that one?
He's been on that one for about 3 years now.
Okay.
All yeah. Right. They actually, he was on, it was the fish oil. And I can't think of the actual name for it, but it was like a fish oil, but he couldn't tolerate that one.
Okay.
Yeah. It begins with the C.
The levocarnitine?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he couldn't tolerate that one.
That's the one for us that just smells awful.
Awful, yeah.
Yeah, that when you said it tastes so bitter, I'm like, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Same
about,
yeah.
Awful. Yeah. So what kind of improvements do you notice, or do you notice when he doesn't take his cocktail? Like, what are things that you see?
You know, I noticed that his energy. Mm-hmm. You can just see that if he's, for some reason, like if he's not feeling well and doesn't take his dosage for some reason or something, you can see that he really doesn't have the energy that he really should have or could have. And he ends up in bed.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. He ends up in bed for, a day or two, just trying to recuperate and re-energize himself. And mm-hmm. And actually, I do find he's just started back to school, and you can see being back to school that his energy is down a little bit because he's really focusing a lot.
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't think people realize how much energy your brain takes.
I agree.
People always equate energy as to running and jumping and biking, but it's every organ in your body. I mean, I just learned that the eyes use up 30% of your daily energy. I'm like, 30? But then when you think about how much your eyes move around to focus and look far away, look close, look, you know, your peripheral, all the things your eyes do, and then the signals they send back to the brain, of course,
yes,
30% of your energy.
Right. Yeah, they do so much. You're right. Yeah.
They
that is an interesting fact. Yeah.
So what is he studying in school? When you say he went back to school, what's he up to?
He's up to now, he's studying sociology. He wants to be a therapist.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's been obviously seeing therapists, and he just feels that he wants to help people like him.
Oh.
So we're very proud of him for that. Yeah.
That is great. Does he take a full class load, or how does that work for him?
Because of the COVID, he's obviously at home and everything's online. Yeah. He's taken 4 classes a semester.
Whoa.
That
is a full load.
It is a full load. But he maintains it. I told him, get all the support you can. He takes all the support he can from school. And he just, he really is, he organizes his time well. He's really focused on doing that. So he doesn't like downtime.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Very good. So what are some things that you guys did as a family that you think really helped him to get to a better place so that he is able to go to school and be successful and work towards adult things?
I think as a family, trying to find things that helped him, mm-hmm. if that makes sense, like the therapist, and when he was in school, letting all the teachers know, about his condition, and told him that, you might think that he's full of energy, but he might just be exhausted, mm-hmm. Let them know that he might need more time to do certain things that other kids don't need the time on. So,
right.
And I think that helped him. And I think it helped him where he eventually was able to speak for himself and say, you know what, I can't do that right now because my body won't let me. I can't do that right now because my brain is, tired. So I think that's a way, a way that we were able to help them.
Yep. I think teaching our kids that self-advocacy skill to say, I need to rest, I need to rejuvenate is so important, because in our society, that's a sign of laziness or uncooperative, or there's all kinds of derogatory terms for it. But in reality, I always say he's just like a cell phone. He needs to be recharged, let him sit on, I call his bed his charging station.
Exactly.
Let him go to his charging station.
That's it. Right. And, absolutely right.
And he, comes back gangbusters when ready, but.
That's right.
Yeah, it's so important to let them, and I constantly tell other mito families this when they first start out is, really listen to your patient and let them listen to their body so they know I am really tired or I am really hurting and not to push it. It's not to say you just give up, but, really listen, and sometimes baby steps are better than no steps.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Yeah. Because
yep.
I know one of the things as he was in grammar school and even high school, it was always getting in touch with those nurses, letting them know what was going on and letting them know that, if he needs to come down and rest, if he needs to rest, then that's what he needs to do. And some nurses, I will say, were better than others, but we had a lot, and he would say, I need to go to the nurse. And then he would go, like you said, and he would just relax for, even a half hour, just enough to get himself back up to par. And just, mm-hmm. so that was just, letting everybody know what was going on,
even the family.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now you said he's the only one in your family with this?
Yes. Yes, I have. Okay. My daughter, she's older. She's 18 months older. She's she doesn't have symptoms. And then I have 5 nieces and nephews. One niece, 4 nephews, and they don't exhibit. Frankie's the only one that was diagnosed with mitochondrial disease.
Wow, that is very interesting.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And it was and that's why I think it was even more confusing, because it wasn't something that. It was in the family, not nobody in the family knew anything about it, because it was something that just came up. So, I was going to get tested, but then they says that at one time they said, no, I didn't need to be tested. So I was like, I just curious as to how it came, I guess that's the best way for me to explain it. But
where did it come from?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I know with our son, we were all tested, and he's, you know, we call him the one and only, the unique to you, as they like to say. And it's so hard because other family members look at you sometimes like you're off your rocker, you know, and you're explaining things and until they experience it. I know somebody said, I said to them, you know, he's going to seem like he's just your average basic preschooler for the first 20 minutes. And then after that, you're going to go, oh yeah, I see what mom's talking about. And they were like, man, you were dead on. 20 minutes in, I was like, why is that kid laying down playing with the blocks?
I'm sorry.
It's just being transparent, even though at times you just get so tired of explaining it or so tired of having the conversations, but being their advocate as their parent, that's kind of our job, right?
Oh, definitely. I guess, and a silly question is, when, like, I know when Frankie was younger and we were putting him in school, here in Somerville, we have a program called ECIP, which is Early Childhood Intervention Program. And we went there to, they had to do like the testing for him. And it was a little disheartening because they didn't see anything with Frankie. And I understand, like, they couldn't find the mitochondrial and that's, but his other, like, he has sensory integration, he has OCD, he has ADHD. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like, when we went for the testing, it was like, he's a problem child. And it was like, what do you mean he's a problem child? I mean, he's like, you know, he's very active, but yet he'll just collapse when he's exhausted. So, you know what? So it actually took another teacher to guide us to say, no, it's not a problem child. You need to go to a neurologist. Mm-hmm. So that was something that geared us towards finding out. And I don't mean to pry in. If I am, please tell me. No. But is that something that you found with trying to find your way to gear? Like, we went through the school system because it was sort of like, you know, we went to the doctors and they were, you know, more medical stuff. But when we went to the school, it was sort of like, again, they thought problem, you know, quote unquote child. So is that something that you sort of found?
That's what Ted was in the early, we call it early childhood education here in Minnesota. And he started that as a preschooler, you know, young kid. And again, it was being redirected back to a pediatric neurologist who looked at everything. And he was the one who started moving us more towards, we have to figure out this mitochondrial disease thing. But until we do that, you know, let's get these other services in place and let's try to understand all of these other behaviors. Because again, we were almost advocating in a detrimental way for him, so he wasn't as successful as he could be.
Right.
For us, I mean, that was key, but it was so hard. You'd go to school and you'd hear some of these things, and like you said, you'd be like, "Oh, I just need a different teacher. You don't get it."
Exactly. Yeah. It was, and it's just like, and I'm like, you're getting like, I got the feeling like it was like, you know, why are you doing all this? You know, don't try to find something wrong with your kid. But it's like, I want to know because I want to help him. And once I said this to he's a gastroenterologist, and his name is Aubrey Katz, phenomenal doctor. And when I went to him one time and I told him that he had gone for testing and they found that he had sensory integration, he looked at me and he went, "Boy, you look like you had a ton of weight lifted off your shoulders." And I says, "Well, you know what? I feel that way because now I know I can help him. Now I know when the reason I'm putting a shirt on him because of the tag's bothering. I never knew things like that. Now I know." And it was just, now I can find a way to help him. You know, he wraps himself up in a blanket. Why? Because that's comforting, you know, comforting to him. And it's just, he was like, "Oh, you really look like relieved." And I'm like, "Well, yes, one way, because I can find out, you know, he wears a coat that's really tight, and that now I know why, because he likes the comfort." And so it's just, it was funny to try to explain that to people and not sound like, you know, you're looking for something wrong, but it was just, now I can help him. I knew.
Yep.
Why?
We went through the same thing with sensory integration issues, and we couldn't figure out, like, because Ted was a winter baby. I don't know why that matters right now, but anyway, when one of his first springs, we found him trying to pull his shorts down longer. And I was like, what are you doing? And it was because he wasn't used to that bare skin being exposed. And so he just wanted long pants back on. So I'm like, fine, let's put long pants back on.
Pants back on, right?
And it was like, for him, his whole world calmed down and he was able to just do his thing. And my mom, you know, as all good grandmothers do, she's like, it's 80 degrees out. He shouldn't have pants on. And I'm like, I don't really care at this point. You know? You know what? This makes him happy, and he's able to be part of what's going on with all the other cousins. So what does it matter what he's wearing?
That's right. Oh, yeah. Frankie always had the high socks. Yeah, he always, and now that you're saying that, it's like, oh, that makes sense. The high socks, because he didn't want his leg, because they look, yeah, see? Yeah. So as I'm talking, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, that's what we have. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But
we were constantly, like, watching him, and learning about that sensory integration was a huge thing. I remember I went to a speaker. She wrote a book about it, Carol something. And the whole time she was speaking, I was like, it was like I was playing bingo in my head. I was like, yes, yes, I get that. Oh, yes. Yeah. And I was like almost jumping out of my seat because it was all making sense to me. Why my kid wanted to be wrapped up tight like a burrito. Why preferred, you know, silky sheets over flannel sheets and all these other weird things. And not that you want to say that you're just kind of adapting the world to your kid, but there are some things that you can just modify and be like, you know what, if this is going to allow you to participate, then I don't care if you never wear a flannel shirt again in your life.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. And you know, as you're saying that, it's like, as he's in school, I would have to go again to talk. And it was actually, I had to talk to the vice principal, because in wintertime, they wouldn't allow him to go outside because he never wore a winter coat. Oh. He always wore, and he was, it's funny because he wasn't cold, but he likes to be very warm in the house. So I can't figure it out, but he would not wear a winter coat. So it was, he can go outside wearing this. It's a jean jacket and he's comfortable. If he's not comfortable, he'll tell you, but that's what he wears in the wintertime. And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah. Yeah. He doesn't wear a heavy winter coat, so he can go outside.
Yeah. And lo and behold.
Yeah. And he's like, let him go. So, but it's amazing when you do listen to people and you're like, yeah, oh, that's him. That's it. That's it. That's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, like you said, it was like a weight coming off my shoulders, because it was finally somebody verifying and validating what I had been seeing as a mom. And I have two older kids, and you know, they were just your textbook little munchkins. And then this kid came along and I was like, whoa, this is an alien. What's happening?
Exactly.
But it's kind of like once you put aside all that other, you know, pre-learned, preconceived stuff and just let your kid kind of mold into how they need to be, things just go so much better for them.
So much better. So much better. And he's just like, and it's exactly what he's doing. He's going the way he's following his path, and he's doing it the way he is most comfortable doing.
So how are him and his sister? Like, do they get along well? Do they understand each other?
Yeah, they do. I think as like older now, they do more than probably they did a while ago, but they do. And he'll talk with her about more things than he does with me, which I think is a great thing.
Yep.
And she actually just moved out. So, but she's still in the state. She's only a few blocks away, which is even better. So that's great. She didn't move out of the city or out of the state. So that's good. But they get along really well. I have to say, I'm very blessed in that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's hard. Sometimes siblings feel really neglected or negated, or there's just that whole gamut of, you know, how does this work when you have a sibling who, my son, there are times when he would just literally suck the life out of the family because his needs would be so high. Mm-hmm. We really had to focus to make sure the other two were listened to and cared for and had, you know, some level of equality. And my kids will cringe if they hear me say this, but my motto was always, fair is not equal. You know, and they're like, oh, I hate that phrase. But I'm like, it's not. Fair is not equal in this instance.
Right.
And but it's true. And that's kind of how we survive. So looking forward now for you, Sue, as you see him, you know, kind of getting off into his adult world and you're kind of, it's like a seesaw, right? We're kind of taper off and move in and taper off and move in. Where do you see yourself? What are you looking forward to with him?
I can't wait to see him get his college diploma. That's like a big thing. And then I really I'm looking forward to seeing him start his career, because he really has a lot of energy and enthusiasm for it. And he just wants to help so many people that I just can't wait to see that for him. I really, that's like my biggest, you know, and I'll add my daughter to this too. And she's a teacher. So they both are in the field of helping. So I have to say, I'm really blessed. I'm really looking forward to see them both. Just, you know, she's out on her own now. So that's a big thing. Him, I think it'll be a little tough for me, but,
yep. Oh, I know.
You know, but I think it's going to be something to, it's going to be a blessing. He's got his path and he knows how to follow it.
Exactly. And again, it comes back to just, we have to let them kind of carve their own path. And I know as a mom, sometimes I'm like, ooh, you're definitely going to take the hard road on this one, aren't you?
Oh yeah.
But you got to let them do it. And that's true with all kids, right? You know, sometimes.
Yes, it is. I think I'm learning over the past, I have to say, with all this stuff and him being here doing school and stuff, I have to say, I've been trying to teach myself to step back more and say, okay, he has to do it on his own. Okay, he has to just, and that's very tough for me. I'm going to admit that. That's a very tough thing for me, because I think it was always, like you said, being his advocate, you know, going to the doctors. So I have to let him start taking control of more. And
It's hard. All right. So we're going to do what I call my favorite, well, not favorite, but I love this part of our podcast where I do rapid fire questions. Don't worry. Okay. None, these are going to involve bank accounts or social security numbers.
Okay.
They're just fun questions. So our first one is, what is the last TV show that you loved or binged watched all the way through?
Oh, okay. All the way through. I have to say that was called Yellowstone.
Yes.
Yeah.
So good.
So good.
I was so surprised at how much I liked that.
You know what? I agree. Same here. Because when it first came out, I was like, no. And then when all this happened, I binge watched it, and they actually just had it on again, and I binge watched it again. I'm like, I can't wait for it to come back. Oh my gosh.
Same here.
Oh, loved it. Loved it.
So, what would be a favorite movie?
A favorite movie. Oh, that's a tough one. Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to go with a really older one, and it's called Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? Spencer Tracy, Katharine Hepburn, and Sidney Poitier. That is one of my favorites.
Definitely.
Can watch it over and over again.
Yep. So classic.
Yeah.
I just always wonder how she had such a tiny waist, though. I know that's a weird thing to fixate on, but every time I watch that, I'm like, what did they do to you to get that?
I know.
What's your favorite meal?
Oh, my favorite meal is it's dinner.
Okay.
And dinner time.
And what do you make? Like, what would be like your all-time best meal, like when you sit down with the family?
Oh, my best meal would be chicken parmesan.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Love that.
Love it.
If I were to come into your world and just take a picture of you experiencing just an ordinary moment that you just had lots of joy in, what would that be?
Getting up, having a cup of coffee and seeing my kids.
That is a good one, though. Right?
Yeah.
Start of the day, everybody's just got high expectations. Good cup of coffee. Yep.
Yeah. Getting ready to watch Kelly and Ryan.
I do like Kelly and Ryan. I like Kelly and Ryan so much more than Kelly and Michael.
I agree 100%. I absolutely do. I laugh more with Kelly and Ryan in the morning. Yeah. It's like, just give me that, you know, give me that hour, or even just 20 minutes of them going back and forth. And that's all I need in the morning. And I just get my morning started. Yeah.
They are almost like, they sound like siblings to me sometimes. The way they can just go at each other in a friendly, yes, fun banter.
Yes, absolutely.
I always think, God, it'd be so fun to like go sit at a dinner or a bar or a restaurant with them and just,
yes, you know, just listen to them. That's all. Yeah.
Just be part of it and just kind of help poke the stick into the cage a few times.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. That would definitely be fun. Yeah.
Well, this has been a blast. I'm excited to get to know you more in the MITO world. Like I said, yes, I've been doing this since the 2000s with Ted. He's 21. I feel like we're kindred spirits. We're on the same path here.
Yeah.
Ted's a complex three kid. I know us complex moms, we don't get the same love as the Milos and the Lace people, but
yep.
We're there. We're there. We're out there helping everybody. And yeah. I can't thank you enough for all that you do for the moms out on the East Coast and being willing to talk to us right now and give us some tips and tricks and just letting us know what it's like to be a parent of a child with mitochondrial disease and now an adult child, which comes with all of its own challenges and joys. And yeah. I just look forward to touching base with you again and seeing how things are going and celebrating his graduation.
Oh, I would love that. Yes. Now, really quick, is Ted in school?
He is. Ted is in a vocational program to be a building engineer.
Oh, that's great. Awesome. Yeah.
It's been, and again, this whole COVID thing has just been like his one class on doing electrical work. You really can't do that via Zoom. You gotta be in there. You gotta learn how to put the outlets together. So
that's right. I know.
This has been a bit challenging, but we'll get through it. The whole world's going to get through it. I figure we're all going to be delayed on everything by a year, right?
That's it. Right. Right. So this should be better. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. So we're getting there.
Yeah. Oh, good. Good.
All right. Well, you have a fabulous weekend. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
And thank you. I greatly appreciate it. I appreciate being a part of this. Thank you.
Okay, we'll talk soon, okay? Thank you.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. Yep.
Bye-bye.
Thanks to everyone for joining us for this episode of Energy in Action, brought to you by MITO Action. We look forward to having you join us next week for another patient perspective.